Hi, my name is Trinity, and welcome to Kids Talk Church History, a one-of-a-kind podcast where kids investigate the history of the church. Over 2,000 years ago, Jesus said, "I'll build my church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it." Has he kept his promise? How has Jesus built and preserved his church against all odds? Come with us on a trip through church history to find the answer, here on Kids Talk Church History.
When Jeanne d'Albret was 12 years old, her father, the King of Navarre, prepared a magnificent wedding for her and her future husband, who was a German prince named Wilhelm. Jeanne wore a fancy dress, actually made with silver threads and jewels all over it. She also wore a golden crown. But she didn't exactly walk down the aisle. She had to be carried to the altar by one of the officers of the court. And in spite of all the spankings her family gave her, before the wedding she wrote an official document stating that she had been compelled to marry Wilhelm against her will. She still had to go through with the wedding, but 4 years later she was able to leave Wilhelm by proving that she had never consented to marry him. More on this story later. My name is Lucy. I am 17 and I'm from San Diego, California.
And my name is Christian. I'm 14 and I live in Charleston, South Carolina.
And I'm Trinity. I am 16 and I live in Charleston, South Carolina as well.
Wow. It took her 4 years to prove that she didn't want to marry that man.
That's actually not too bad if you think how many women in those days were forced to marry against their wills.
It was especially prevalent in noble families because the parents would arrange marriages with someone from different powerful families just to keep good relations with them.
A different way of networking.
Yeah, and I can just imagine Jeanne being carried to the altar. My sister, Leia, is 11 now, and I can picture her in the same situation. She'd be crying and screaming the entire way.
Yeah, and one of our hosts, Grace, is also around 12, and she's pretty spunky too.
Yes, I told the story mostly to show her personality. Many princesses obeyed their parents quietly, but not Jeanne. She was quite a character. Someone from that time described her as frivolous and high-spirited. That same personality would come out later when she declared herself a Protestant. That was very shocking for the time. Plus, by then she was already a queen, so that meant that her whole kingdom had to be Protestant as well.
What kingdom was that?
Well, she was the Queen of Navarre, a small kingdom at the border between France and Spain. It didn't seem very important, but she actually had a lot of connections with the French court because her mother, Marguerite, was the sister of the King of France.
I've also read that her mother liked the Protestants, even though she came from a Catholic court and also stayed Catholic.
Yes, she actually protected a lot of them during persecution. It seems that she also protected John Calvin, who we talked about in an earlier episode.
And as a Protestant, Jeanne started a school to train pastors and commission the translation of the New Testament into the local languages. I think she also had all the statues taken out of the churches in her kingdom.
Yeah, and I always wondered what it would be like for a common person who goes to church every week. And then suddenly you go and your church is completely different. The liturgy is different. Everything is in your language. And there's no more candles or incense or bells.
Yeah, that would be really interesting to see the different ways that the common people reacted. But sadly, I don't think we have many writings from common people, correct?
I don't think so. But things had become very difficult for Jeanne. By that time, she was married to a man named Antoine, and he had also declared himself Protestant. But since France was, at the time, divided between Catholics and Protestants, the new ruler of France, Catherine de' Medici, convinced many of the noblemen to support the Catholic cause. And she convinced Antoine. So then Jeanne was in quite a pickle because Catherine told her to obey her husband, but she knew she had to obey Christ.
I have also read that her husband wanted to arrest her and lock her in a convent.
Yeah, she had so much trouble. I think at the end, she retired to a Protestant fortress in the town of La Rochelle, and it was like a stronghold for the Protestants at the time when fights between the Catholics and the Protestants were becoming more violent and fierce.
Yes, she was very involved in those. She welcomed the Protestant refugees who flocked to La Rochelle, sent letters to get support, sold her jewelry to finance the fighting, and even went to the battlefield to help in any way she could, including assisting the injured.
But eventually La Rochelle was conquered, right?
Yes, and shortly after Jean's death in 1572, there was the worst slaughter of Protestants ever on the Catholic feast of Saint Bartholomew.
So that's why they call it Saint Bartholomew's Day Massacre.
Things didn't go very well after that. Even Jean's son, Henry, who started out Protestant, turned Catholic later because he believed it was a way to keep peace in the country.
There's a lot more to say about Jean and the French Reformation, but we have here a wonderful guest who can help us to find out more. Mrs. Christine Fahrenhorst, author of Wings Like a Dove, The Courage of Queen Jean d'Albret. Thank you so much for joining our podcast, Mrs. Fahrenhorst.
Oh, you're very welcome. I'm happy to be your guest.
Now, you've heard our little discussion about Jean d'Albret and the French Revolution. Is there anything we left out? Any important information you might want to add?
There's one or two comments. Is it okay if I give them on that?
Yeah, of course. Go ahead.
Okay. At the onset, you mentioned that Jean's father, who was Henry of Navarre, arranged the wedding, but actually it was her uncle, King Francis I, who arranged the wedding. And her mom and dad were, her mom was a sister of the king and her dad, the brother-in-law, and they were just a little scared of him. And that's why they agreed to the wedding, but they didn't really want it. That's one thing. The other thing I would like to say is that you had mentioned that Jean was high-spirited, that she had a lot of spunk, you said, just like your sister and or the other host. And she did. She had traits. She had character traits, as we all do. And one of these was that she had a lot of spunk. I'd sort of like to point out that all of us have character traits, and how we use them to the glory of God is often arranged by him. It is said that you can't have courage without fear, and there was a lot of fear in her life. She had a hard time in her childhood, and God used this time to prepare her for later. And for example, and I think you'll come to that in one of your questions, when she had been queen for 5 years, she made profession of her faith, not just in front of her church, but in front of the entire country. She professed her faith in the Lord Jesus Christ. Now, some of you may have done your profession of faith already in front of your church, and you have your relatives and your friends. And now, when she made profession of faith, it was in front of a whole country. She declared Calvinism to be the state religion. That took courage. She abolished prostitution and gambling. That took courage. And she put down some of the Catholic institutions, and it all took courage. She might have retribution for that, but she did it. And that was a gift of God. She used her character to honor him. So those were my only comments on that. So
thank you. Thank you for those. And I'm sure in our story, we've also left out quite a few things. Is there anything else you can tell us that will help our listeners to get a better picture of her life and the situation in France at the time?
Well, the situation in France at that time was pretty well Roman Catholic. It would become more and more Protestant as time went on, but the situation was not easy for Protestants at all.
Now, Jean was born in 1528 and died in 1572 at only 44 years of age. I've heard that her health was not the best. Do we know how she died?
Well, there's different views on that. Some people say it was natural causes, and they actually point to tuberculosis, which did happen to people, and it's a disease of the lungs. There are others, and I would tend to agree with that, that say she was poisoned by her, by the queen, Queen Catherine de Medici, whom you mentioned. Catherine was a Medici. She came from Italy. A lot of her relatives had been popes, and they had a history of assassinating people they didn't like or didn't get along with. And certainly Jean and Catherine did not get along because of their religious views. Catherine wanted the marriage, and Jean didn't really want that at all. Now, Catherine had a habit of giving gloves to people who visited her in the palace. And it's very well possible that she gave Jean a pair of gloves, which Jean put on. These gloves might have been laced with poison, and it would have worked into her skin, and she would have died. But it is conjecture, and nobody can prove it.
Mm. Well, we also mentioned that her son married Queen Catherine, or that she died before her son married Queen Catherine's daughter, who was a Roman Catholic, correct? I understand that Queen Catherine arranged this marriage to try to make peace between the two factions, but it didn't work out because the massacre happened right after the wedding. Did the marriage make things worse?
Actually, it made them a lot worse. The Protestant leaders of that time had come to Paris for the wedding. It was sort of like, you probably don't remember when Charles married Princess Diana and all kinds of leaders came to England to witness the wedding. So it was with this wedding as well. A lot of Protestant leaders came. Now, during the wedding, very close to the wedding, a man by the name of de Coligny, who was the Admiral of France and who was a leading Protestant, there was an assassination attempt on his life. The Protestants in Paris, and Paris was a really Roman Catholic city, were very upset during their visit, and they started to murmur, they started to form groups, kind of like rioting. And Catherine thought, oh no, they will storm the palace, my life will be in danger. So she called in the troops, she called in the army. They came into Paris chanting, kill them all, kill them all. She had only given permission for some of the leaders to be killed, but it got totally out of control. The army, as well as the Roman Catholic people, all started killing the Huguenots that they knew and that they probably disliked. So men, women, and children were all killed randomly. They were piled into carts, ladies, babies, men, and they were dumped into the River Seine. The river ran red with blood, and that is why the wedding, instead of becoming a peaceable thing, was called the Scarlet Nuptials of the time.
Eventually, Henry gave in to the pressure and actually became Roman Catholic to bring peace to the country, but he also made a law asking all citizens of France to tolerate both religions. Do you think that this law worked just for a little bit and helped the Protestants?
You kind of have to go back to the wedding. During the wedding, at the time of the wedding, Henry was Protestant. When the massacre started, he panicked. And his wife helped him. He abjured his Protestant faith and he became a Roman Catholic. After the wedding, he was virtually held prisoner at the court for about 3.5 years. After that, he escaped. He went to the Protestant and he became a Protestant again. He was a good soldier. He led the, I think there were 8 civil wars between that and him ascending the throne. He helped and he was very successful in his battles. We won't go through all the battles or anything like that, but he became king and then issued an edict, the Edict of Nantes, in which the Huguenots got the right to worship freely in a number of countries. They got the right to establish their own schools, to have their own military, whereas the Roman Catholics got the monasteries restored. So he pleased both sides, but it didn't help himself that much, as about 14 years later, he was assassinated by a Roman Catholic. Now there's a bunch of Louises, King Louises, that followed him, and Louis the 14th abolished the Edict of Nantes. So in the long run, did it help a lot? A little bit, but not a whole lot.
You also mentioned people called the Huguenots, and those were French Protestants. Can you explain how they got their name?
I can give you a guess. Now, some people say, and I kind of go along with this, there's a Flemish word called huisgenoten. And huis means house, and genoten is sort of like fellows. And there's another term, and that is German. It's close to Flemish. And it's eidgenossen. Eid means oath. Genossen is, again, fellowship. So take those two words, take a combination of that, and in French, it would sort of go Huguenot. It's very similar to those words, and that's where you get house fellows, people that met together to fellowship and confess the name of Christ. That would be my guess.
I was wondering, why did you decide to write your book on Jean d'Albret?
That's a nice question, because it's really easy. The PNR Publishing decided to do a series called Chosen Daughters. I think Simonetta Carr also did a book in there. And they asked me if I would consider it. And I love writing. So I said, yeah. And I started to read and write.
I was also wondering, did you have to do a lot of research when you wrote your book? As well as, what was the most difficult thing in that book for you?
Well, thank you for that question. That's good also. I did an awful lot of reading and writing. Whatever I could punch in on the computer and it came up with her name in it, I tried to get it and read it. It's really important when you're writing about somebody and you want to make that person real, that you understand the times that he or she lives in, that you understand the family situation he or she comes out of. But the most difficult thing is to incorporate into your writing the providence of God, because no matter who you are, God has the beginning and the end in your place. You guys also, you have a reason for being, and you have to realize that God is the beginner and finisher of your race.
Was there anything that surprised you when you did your research?
Well, not really. The only thing that surprises me often is how much I don't know. I mean, that doesn't surprise me, but I don't know an awful lot. And then when you read situations that surround the people you write about, you almost always come across evil that is present in the world as we see it today as well. And what surprises me then is the goodness of God to provide us with a book, and he's given us the Bible. He's given us the way to salvation. And again, when you see the wickedness of man, you are totally surprised at the goodness and compassion of God.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite story about Jean's life?
It's not really a story. I'm, again, surprised. He was sick at the end, very sick, had a lot of pain, and people said, "Are you afraid to die?" And she actually said, "Yes, I am willing to die, I assure you, more willing than to remain in this world where I see nothing but vanity. I have never feared death," she said. "I do not dare to murmur at the will of God." Now, it was quite something to say those words, because she was only 44 years old. And maybe that seems old to you guys, but it's not very old. And she had, at that time, she was ill. She had wars. She had a husband whom she loved, but he left her. Not only that, he also left the religion she loved. And yet she said, "I trust God and will not murmur against his will." And that really impresses me, because to me, she is a living letter of the love of God.
Yeah, that's a great story. Yeah. We're also learning about the Reformation in many different countries. What is the most unique thing about the French Reformation that surprised you?
Well, the French Reformation had at least 8 civil wars. A lot of people were killed, and that was a very sad thing. Then you had the Edict of Nantes, and it was revoked in 1685. And as a result of that, so really as a result still of the Reformation, 150,000 Huguenots left France and went to other countries. You may like to know that they tried to start a colony in Florida, but it didn't work out. 5,000 went to Ireland. Thousands went to England, where they started businesses in finance, in silk production, in publishing, and they were amalgamated into English society. 35,000 went to Holland. Holland welcomed them with open arms, and their economy boomed after that. Germany sent people to France with flyers and pamphlets and said, please come to our country. We would really welcome you. And then I think about 2,000 went to your country, to America, and were also incorporated into American society. And you probably, or maybe you don't know, Paul Revere was a Huguenot. He descended from them. And Alexander Hamilton was too. The Huguenots that did remain in France were still persecuted and did not get freedom of religion until the French Revolution.
Now, finally, we have two fun questions we ask all of our guests. First, how did you become interested in church history?
Okay, I like that question. My dad was a pastor, a minister, and also a church historian. He also wrote books. They were in Dutch, though. And I lived in Holland till I was about 10 years old. And because I was the youngest in my family, I was often sent along with my dad. We didn't have a car. We had bicycles. And so I rode on the bar in front of my dad, and he would tell me stories as we rode along the streets. And he would always know which house to stop at, and there was a bunch of them. And we'd go upstairs to the attic, and there would always be little libraries. And he would show me the books there. It was a dusty place. He would show me what not to read and what to read, and he would tell me stories. But he always stressed the providence of God in everything, and that's maybe why I'm like that too. God had blessed me with an encyclopedic father.
That's amazing. Now, for our second question, if you could meet anyone from the time of the Reformation, who would that be?
Well, I thought about that for a long time, and I would love to meet John Delbray, obviously, but I think, and maybe I'll disappoint you here, I really want to meet all of them and shake their hand and just talk about what they did and get acquainted, and that'll probably take the rest of our lives. So, in heaven.
That's honestly probably one of the best answers you could give to that question. But anyway, Mrs. Fahrenhorst, we're very thankful that you decided to spend this time with us and to answer our questions about Jean d'Albret and the French Reformation. And for our listeners, if you visit our website, kidstalkchurchhistory.org, you can find a link where you can enter a drawing for a free book. This time, we're actually giving away Christine Fahrenhorst's book, Wings Like a Dove, The Courage of Queen Jean d'Albret, courtesy of P&R Books. And while you're on our website, you can check out past episodes, special news, recommended readings, and more. Now, in partnership with the Alliance of Confessing Evangelicals, and on behalf of my co-hosts, Christian and Trinity, my name is Lucy. Thank you for listening to Kids Talk Church History.